Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you've caught up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome in to another Behind the Bets podcast. It is Thursday, October 17th. I am Doug Kazarian. John Murray, who was unavailable for the college football podcast, given his duties as a suit, he will be joining us momentarily. Mike Clay, back from illness. He was on the injury report, but he's going to be good to go. So Mike Clay is back. Travis, good to be back with you, man.
Are we buying that Murray was unavailable because of work?
I think so, because he gave me the heads up before game four. So even when they close things up.
It's like the kid that's like coughing early on to, you know, when they're going to go, when they're going to be sick.
He's kind of like when I did in high school, maybe got a little sick around tournament that opening Thursday, Friday.
Yeah.
Eh? Off that Friday?
Yeah, so he's letting you know that, you know, he might have some work stuff, knowing that his team would win and he might be feeling the effects. I don't know. I'm just saying.
It's not a bad theory. Fortunately, my mom does not listen to the podcast, so she will not know that I faked sickness that one day.
I think the statute of limitations are up.
Yeah, and it was SAT the next day. So I was like, Mom, I also got to be well for the SAT, and I can study at home, and I just sat and watched TV all day.
That was the best in high school, just leaving. I would do the Big Ten tournament the week before, and then that, you know, first couple of days, like, feeling something.
There was nothing like watching the tournament as a kid, because this was pre, like, all this coverage and stuff. So,
before they also had every game on, and you, like, Gumbel had to take you to the next game, which in a way is actually kind of nice.
I remember as a kid, we wanted to watch another game that was, like, a close game. It was, like, the 8-9 game or something like that, and UCLA, being in L.A., kind of dominated the coverage, and they were like up 30 as a one seed or something in the first round, and had to watch it start to finish.
Yep.
And we called CBS. We're like yelling at them, not knowing how programming works, given we were in high school. So
I also highly doubt that you got to somebody at CBS that had any sort of like real power.
Correct.
To make
like
any changes.
Someone in the assignment.
You got to
desk.
An intern at the local affiliate.
All right, good to see you, bud. So no NBA this podcast. We will do more NBA next week with the season starting Tuesday. I think I like the Nuggets tonight. Got to check. Keep an eye on my Twitter feed. I think we might be going Nuggets for our best bet tonight. I think the Blazers are going to sit, guys. Nuggets go like 12 deep. So a little preseason hoops action tonight. But great weekend in the NFL, as always. And we have a big game tonight with Chiefs and Broncos. Let's get to it with the director.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Oh man, the situations never cease to amaze me.
I heard there was a good one last night. Yeah, I didn't see the game last
college.
Night. I heard there was a really good one.
South Alabama, third and goal from the one. Does the shotgun old draw?
Yeah,
stuffed, and then as a 17-point dog in the first quarter, they kick it. I think it was even registered as a 17-yard field goal.
Can you even kick a 17-yard field goal? Like, is the ball in the end zone at that point that you're kicking a 17-yard field goal?
I mean, it's just so the box score the box score says 17-yard field goal. So they must not have put it back. Like, they must have done it 16 yards back. But
maybe they kicked it from like the line of scrimmage was like the 1-inch line.
I just
send
don't
in
know
the field
how
goal
you
unit, guys. It's fourth
it.
Down.
I mean, God forbid they're pinned down their own one.
Well, that's what they – that's just – a lot of these coaches, the knee-jerk reaction is it's fourth down, okay, send in the kicking team.
Got to get points. Got to get points.
Yeah, there's no thought process to it. I mean, we saw it last Thursday night in the NFL. Pat Shurmur punted on – I think it was fourth and two, I want to say. Down by 14 points in the fourth quarter, send in the punt team. There's no thought process. It actually – when I saw that play last Thursday night, I thought of Anita Marks and her hostage – analogy.
Right. It's Kate Fagan.
Oh, it was Kate Fagan. Excuse me. I apologize. I thought of Kate Fagan. Actually, I thought of Anita Marks, but next time I'm going to think of Kate Fagan.
Right.
And excuse me for that. But yeah, no, it's It's absolutely brilliant analogy by Kate
really
Fagan.
Is.
And she's exactly right, too. That's what makes it so brilliant. She's 100% correct about it.
Yeah, I wanted to give her a big hug when we were sitting in a commercial break. I think it was a meeting or commercial break before OTL. And she made that analogy, and I just looked at her like, that's brilliant. Because we had already been, you know, humming along with Kicking Us for Losers. So
yeah,
it is
yeah.
fascinating.
I'd like her to – can you let her know that I'm a big fan of her work? I mean, she's going to say, who the hell is that? But I just want to be communicated that I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah, no, I've told her. And you know what's funny? The next time we did OTL – you know, the Friday Four where there's a bunch of us, I told her that I'd been referencing it on the pod, and she, like, smiled and laughed about it. But it's really just like, yeah, get in the van, extend the life.
That is what it is.
But that's the problem. We talked about it with the Seahawks-Rams is coaches are operating in a vacuum, and you can't – sometimes your best opportunity is not at the end of the game. It's not a last resort. Sometimes – I mean, Anthony Lynn punted 4th-and-2 on his own 40 the other day on Sunday night. In I want to say third quarter, but like that's your window. You have to work
backwards. I just realized when I was on with Mitch and Paul, they asked me who the worst coaches in the NFL were, and I forgot to mention Anthony Lynn. That is a great shame for me that I mentioned.
Well, what was your answer?
They asked me for the three best, the three worst. I mentioned Dan Quinn. I mentioned Jason Garrett. I don't think much of Adam Gase. I forgot about Anthony Lynn. Anthony Lynn is certainly near the top.
So it's a difficult discussion because
it is.
It's such an elaborate and complex game, right? And we don't know exactly who's to blame for some of this stuff. The only things we do know are these decisions to go for it, to punt, like the really binary, very gradable, because we don't know if, like, Anthony Lynn's excellent with the linebackers. Like, we don't know the scheming. And it's really a complex and layered question and discussion that we're really not qualified to necessarily 100% rank them. All we can do is kind of rank the stuff we can see from afar, which is some of this kicking decisions.
I agree with that. I'm trying to look at the big picture as much as possible, but you're right. We don't see the behind the scenes stuff. And then we also talked about the best coaches. I had Belichick 1. If you want to write down, I had Bill Belichick number 1.
We can put that in ink.
And then I made a case for Sean Payton being up there. The boys, the Follow the Money boys, they love Kyle Shanahan, and he's doing an excellent job. I like John Harbaugh. I like Frank Reich. I like Doug Peterson. I mean, we talk about all these really bad coaches, but there are some really good coaches out there in the NFL too.
No, absolutely. I 100%, and I think that's what accentuates some of the disparity and some of the negative coaching decisions. Because
and Sean
see
McVay,
guys who get it done all the time.
Those guys were very dismissive of Sean McVay, but, you know, he's on a 3-game losing streak right now. You don't want to be a slave to the moment. Sean McVay is a very, very good coach.
Yeah. Okay. So that was the big – I'm trying to think of the big storylines from last weekend as we kind of
– Last weekend? I think the big storyline last weekend is that I gave Brent Musburger Jacksonville and they lost. I mean, that to
yeah,
me –
Yeah,
that
got up to 3, huh?
Yeah, there was 3. That was a. It's funny. That was a really sharp side. I know it lost, but that was a side we saw a lot of sharp money come in on. And some of the other sides we saw a lot of sharp money come in on. Cleveland. Cleveland was definitely one. Cleveland was one. It flipped to where Cleveland was favored at kickoff. And then the funny one was the Redskins. The Redskins number closed 6 here. We had guys laying 6 at post time.
That's
so
insane.
There was some really sharp steam on Washington. And then obviously those 3 sides all lost, Jacksonville, Cleveland, and the Redskins. None of them covered. I really enjoyed the end-of-game sequence in the Redskins-Dolphins game where, like, both teams were trying not to win and that the
you
Dolphins
really
called – I thought the Dolphins called, like, the dumbest possible bubble screen. The Redskins, I'm sure, were trying to win because they're even dumber than Miami. But, no, I don't think Miami wants to win. And the Redskins shouldn't want to win, but I'm sure they do.
Yeah, so there's some competition now for that number one pick. Miami thought it had it wrapped up, fielding that team first couple of weeks, but the Redskins game.
Cincinnati's going to give them a – don't forget about Cincinnati. I mean, everybody's talking about the Redskins, and the Redskins are terrible, but Cincinnati is 0-6. So,
yeah, in the spring,
they got a shot too.
In the spring, we gave out plays in terms of the odds that Caesars had in terms of who's going to finish with the worst record.
Mm-hmm.
Mine was Cincinnati.
Nice.
So I didn't realize the Dolphins would be doing this. And
What were the odds on Cincinnati that you gave out?
I think like 6-1 or something like that. I'm trying to think.
Well, you know what? I thought Zach Taylor was going to be an upgrade over Marvin Lewis just because he's not Marvin Lewis. And so far, clearly that doesn't seem to be the case.
Well, that team is pretty incompetent. Although they covered last weekend. They've had some moments. They almost won at Seattle. I mean, that's looking back, that might be the most surprising result. I mean,
Seattle's like they really probably should have won.
Russell
that
Wilson's
game,
like the MVP favorite right now, and Bengals are winless, and they almost went into Seattle and won. They really should have in a lot of ways.
They probably should have won that game, and I thought after watching that Week 1 game, I thought, you know, this Zach Taylor, he's going to get this team going, and I was incorrect about that.
Road dogs on a ridiculous run. Mm-hmm. Underdogs in general on a ridiculous run. Are we expecting regression?
I mean, you would always expect everything to kind of regress to the mean, so to speak. And the only play I'm giving you this week is a favorite.
Ooh, you're only doing one play. Oh, I see how that
is. I'm gun shy after last week. I really, 0-2. I was so disappointed in Jacksonville, and I thought for sure just seeing the way the market was moving on Sunday morning, I felt so good about the Cleveland play. Cleveland had a pretty good sized lead in that game. And
yeah, there was a really interesting sequence where they somehow gave up like two scores in the final 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Freddie Kitchens is a guy that he's getting towards that level where he's going to be mentioned with the worst coaches. It's like too early in his tenure to put him in there. And I feel the same way about Flores in Miami. There's no data on Flores right now. He's coaching a team that's trying to be bad, so it's hard to say he's the worst coach. But I think Kitchens is a guy he's drifting towards that territory.
Interesting.
The play calling in Cleveland is terrible.
Well, some of that's on Mayfield, and he's not throwing the ball. I think he needs a little kind of tune-up because Cleveland had ball up 8 at the end of the first half. This is what I was trying to remember. Okay. Cleveland had the ball in the 2-minute warning on Seattle's 12. Okay. What do you do here with 2 minutes to go? Again, you can't operate in a vacuum. 1st and 10 on Seattle's 12. What do you do?
1st and 10 on what do? I would run the ball.
Right. Of course you do. They did.
They did run the ball. Okay.
What do you do on 2nd and 8 with a 1:35
second
to go?
2nd and 8. How many timeouts does Seattle have?
That's the problem. I don't know. On this game.
I mean, it would depend a little bit on that, but I mean, I could be convinced either way on 2nd and 8, depending on how many timeouts.
So the run's the no-brainer, and then on first down, and then the 2nd down, I probably would have run, but, you know, you don't have to. Obviously, you're trying to come away with points, but the problem is you have to, like, make sure you. So he was intercepted.
Well, if Seattle had all 3 timeouts, they could just use one of their timeouts, and you wouldn't be. So that would be an important piece to know there.
Right, so he was ended up being intercepted, and Seattle drove the field and scored a touchdown with 22 seconds to go.
Oof!
And missed the.
Yeah, that was an ugly one. We had a great Sunday.
They had their chance, you know.
The book really had a great Sunday, but our big loser in the early games was without a doubt was Seattle. Everybody was on Seattle in terms of public betting.
Right. So anyway, you talked about you like the Cleveland side. I'm not saying it was lost at the end of the first half, but, I mean, that's huge. You're up 8, have a chance to go up 2 scores, and you blow it, and actually they close it to 2. So, anyways, those are like big kind of pros versus Joe splits, right? The Browns, Seahawks, Jags, Saints.
Yeah, for sure, especially the Browns, Seahawks more than any other. I know that in the Super Contest Gold, the Browns were the number 3 pick, and in the Super Contest Classic, the Seahawks were the number 3 pick. So you don't usually see that where the same game, opposite sides are in Classic and the Gold. And I think it really illustrates just what a sharp versus square skew that game, how skewed that game was in terms of sharps versus squares.
What's the number one in the Super Contest? What's the first place record right now? Is it 27-3?
The guy's 27-3.
That's got to be the best start.
I don't know, but I mean, they asked me that, and I said it's got to be right. I mean, how could anyone have? There's no way anybody's gone 28-2 or 29-1 to start the year. That's absolutely unbelievable. 27-3. His worst week is a 4-1 week.
That guy is kryptonite on a stick,
or the polar opposite.
It's unbelievable. I mean, everyone's going to be asking for his picks this week. I know that much.
I mean, has he done well in the past?
I heard that he was in the contest for many years. I don't know the guy personally. But those picks will be on our website, westgatelasvegas.com, on Saturday afternoon if you guys want to check them out.
There'll be a spike in traffic, I would imagine.
Yeah, the alias is Tuco, like Tuco Salamanca from Breaking Bad. And, yeah, no, that, in fact, we confirm that that is the reference. It's a reference to Tuco Salamanca. So the guy not only has good taste in TV, but apparently he can pick NFL winners like it's easy, which it's not.
He's got Biff's almanac, clearly, apparently.
Yeah, it's very impressive stuff.
Yeah, 27-3 ATS is pretty ridiculous.
It's unbelievable, man. It's unbelievable. I think it's hard to pick one NFL winner.
That's a fact. So, yeah. All right, so let's spin forward. Tonight's game is so intriguing, right? You have Kansas City off two losses, Denver off two wins in Mile High, the Mile High City. I know it's not called the Mile. A flat three minus 110. And I would imagine this is going to be a pros versus Joes, because one guy who I would probably, let's just say he's not a sharp, came up to me in the newsroom yesterday. He's like, hey, I grabbed Kansas City as soon as it got to three. And I'm not going to mock him. I mean, it's the NFL, right? You can't. But I was like, I anticipated that one. But
well, at least he waited to get minus three. Correct. I mean, it's not like he laid 4.5 or something.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, I'm not judging. I mean, I have no opinion. I actually like first half under. But I am what do we make of this Chiefs team? Is there something called, is the recipe now out? Like, has the riddle been solved?
I don't think so. I think Kansas City's just a little bit banged up. I chalk it up more to that. And they lost to some pretty good teams. Indianapolis and Houston are pretty solid teams. Houston's a very good road team, something that gets discussed a lot. The Texans seem to play better on the road. Kansas City minus three here. We opened this game 4.5. It's come down everywhere. Definitely some sharp money on Denver tonight. And we're going to need Denver, but not for as much as you would think. I don't think the public is going to come in with both hands on Kansas City just because they're on a two-game losing streak.
So the sharp money you guys took was 4.5, 4, and 3.5, I would imagine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So not
three. 4.5 for sure. Four and 4.5 is where we saw the money come in on Denver.
Makes sense. Okay. The number feels high. The total feels high. Especially this Broncos team. I feel like they never score in the first half.
Yeah, Kansas City's defense is not much to write home about, and I still believe a lot in Patrick Mahomes, and he's going to have some more of these high-flying games where he throws for a billion yards. I'm not saying it's going to happen tonight against Denver and the Broncos defense, but I do believe that Mahomes is going to get it together very soon.
Could happen tonight.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Mahomes is fully capable of it.
He looked great. Last week until he got his ankle rolled again, so he re-aggravated the injury.
Right. Yeah, and they're just a banged-up team. They've got other guys hurt on offense. Mahomes is not 100%. Their defense isn't very good. I mean, Kansas City's definitely got some issues right now. There's no question. But it's a long season. I still think Kansas City's a team that's going to be there at the end.
I agree. Spagnuolo, though, has got to figure some stuff out on that front.
I don't disagree with that.
So right now you think it's holding steady at three?
Yeah, I don't think it would go down from three like to 2.5. I think if anything, it might go back up the other way, closer to the opening number. But as of right now, it looks like a pretty solid three.
Okay. Let's go to Sunday. Saquon Barkley, I think, is going to play. It's probable, so that's obviously hinting that way. But I think he is going to go just because he's been so close the last couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Minus the three here with the Giants and Kyler Murray against Daniel Jones.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see Saquon Barkley, if he is back in the lineup, and just the slight adjustment you make to the point spread. Something that you and I talked about a lot last year was the whole Saquon Barkley being the second overall pick debate. Well, what do you think Sam Darnold is worth to the point spread right now for the New York Jets? I mean, it's close to 10 points, and Barkley is maybe worth a point at most. So I think that really illustrates what a mistake the Giants made. But as far as this game is concerned, most of the betting is on New York. I don't think this is going to be a high-volume game, though, at 10 a.m.
Do you think the Giants would undo it if they could, or are they happy with Daniel Jones and Barkley?
I don't know how you could possibly – I watched some of that Jets-Cowboys game on Sunday. I thought Darnold really looked good, man. So I would much rather have Darnold if I was running the Giants.
Okay. All right. I can see how Giants fans are excited, though, because I think Barkley is pretty special in that regard. He's awesome.
Well, Barkley's Barkley is very special. Barkley is a tremendous player, and I like Danny Dimes too. I don't like the nickname, but I like Danny Dimes. But I just think Sam Darnold, really, he's so young. I think he really has a chance to be a great player.
All right. Yeah. No. I mean, he definitely has that chance. So I lean Giants here. Arizona. The one thing I will say, and we need to kind of, we know this in the NFL, it's a week-to-week league. We know all that. You got to have short memories. Teams can look terrible 1 week. We have to also allow for just improvement. What Arizona looked like the first couple weeks with a rookie coach and a rookie quarterback is not going to be how they look in the end of the season, right? They're playing the long game, obviously, with Kyler Murray and Kingsbury.
Yeah.
So I think maybe, I mean, Atlanta defense helped, don't get me wrong, but there's a chance this team is sort of kind of figuring things out. Maybe Murray, being the incredible athlete he is, sort of kind of just, you know, you like get used to something. You know, when you get a new job, it starts to slow down eventually, they say. I think maybe the game's starting to slow down now for Murray's. It kind of gets a feel for what linebacker speed is or whatever it may be, that he may have kind of taken a couple steps forward here at what we saw against Atlanta last week.
No, I don't disagree with that. And that whole team seems to be settling in better. You know, Arizona was a very poorly coached team last year. They made a good decision moving on from that coaching staff after 1 year. And you can see the improvements there. And it's really, it's reflected in this point spread. The fact that they're only getting 3 points on the road against the Giants, even with the Giants getting some of these offensive players back, shows that the Cardinals are considered equal with New York. I mean, not that New York is a great team. I'm just saying that Arizona's not far behind some of these other mid-level teams like the New York Giants.
Yeah, and it's reflected in the over-under as well, 50.5. So clearly some points are expected from these offenses, which is a good game. This is a good game, too. Indy hosting Houston. So the Texans coming off the nice win at Arrowhead. How did you feel about Bill O'Brien not kicking the field goal and going for the seal of the victory on fourth down with KC out of timeouts?
I loved it. I mean, it was a great decision by Coach O'Brien. Decision. There's no doubt about that. I thought it was a great move. They completed a pass to DeAndre Hopkins. They iced the game right there. This really could be the best game of the week in the NFL, this Houston-Indianapolis game. There's a couple other games in the afternoon, but I think this looks like a great matchup. I'll tell you this right now, ticket count, about 10-1 on the Texans. We got them plus one right now in Indianapolis. Colts are off their bye week. They're getting some of their defensive players healthy. I'm a big fan of Frank Reich's. The Colts might be worth a look here in this spot.
Ooh, this feels like your Musburger pick.
It's not, actually. My Musburger pick is within the same division, but the Colts was not my pick. I do like the Colts, though. Maybe I will give you two picks this week on the Bonanza.
Yeah, I feel like these AFC South games are all the same. You know, it's like so funny. You get these like 1 or 2 point spreads, and they all come down to the crazy drive at the end, and they're exciting finishes.
Oh, no doubt. And this game and the other game between these two teams in Houston later in the year will go a long way to determining who wins that division. The Titans are a mess right now. They finally benched Mariota, but they're a mess. And I don't see Jacksonville getting back into the playoff race.
Really? I do.
I just don't
that
see
means
it.
You.
If you were watching him last Sunday and you're rooting for him, you can count him out. I'll tell you that much. He didn't look too good.
Week
New Orleans secondary.
It's a week-to-week league.
That is a great point. That is great. And New Orleans has a very good secondary, but you're right. It is absolutely a week-to-week league. There's no question.
Okay, so the next game, and this should almost become a drop here on the – it's a flat spot for the Dolphins. As crazy as that sounds, it's a flat spot for Miami.
It's a flat year for the Dolphins, but I'll hear you out.
Look, you go all in on a game like that, and now you have to go to Buffalo – I mean, it's not snowing or anything, but it's just not a trip they want to make. And the Dolphins' defense, I mean, there should be an over-under on Dolphins' first downs with that Bills' defense.
Buffalo's defense is good, and they're coming off their bye week. They've got a chance to move to 5-1 here with a win that they almost certainly will get.
If Rosen were starting, this would be in the bonanza for me. I think this is just going to be they're going to nuke them. Now, Fitzpatrick is a very volatile quarterback, as we know. So I just can't lay 17 with the Bills' offense. But this had 34-3 written all over it with Rosen.
Yeah, the only way that Buffalo could – the only way this game could even be close would be if Josh Allen just had a couple of ghastly turnovers and totally blew it. I mean, as long as he just keeps everything in front of him, moves the sticks on third down, and lets his defense win the game – Buffalo should win this thing just going away. I mean, this game shouldn't even be competitive. Buffalo is just such a better team than Miami.
And if they wanted to be kind of clever, you could make it so Miami wouldn't cross midfield if you just, like, punted on your own on their 40 every time.
Yeah, I think Buffalo's got some talent on offense. I like the fact that Allen can pick up first downs with his legs on third down. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big, big part of his game and keeps that defense fresh. All Allen has to do is just not totally blow this game, and they're going to cruise to another victory and be 5-1.
Yeah, the line's too high, though. But if it were, I mean, if it were like 13.5, I would so lay it. Obviously, now the market has it at 17. Yeah, I was surprised.
Very
the line
low
was
volume.
This high.
Very low volume game. I'll tell you that much.
Well, I mean, the over/under. I mean,
it's two teams that people aren't really interested in. It's a very, very high point spread, which scares off a lot of public bettors. And it's at 10 a.m. with, you know, so many other games. It's a very low volume game.
Over under 41's come up from about 39 here. Not a whole lot of scoring expected. So I believe the team total for the Dolphins will be 12-ish. I would take under. I mean, I wish Rosen were, you know, that's what gets me.
Just be careful going
competent.
Under. You go under those super low numbers or over those really high numbers. There's the margin for error just isn't there. Like, would you really be that surprised if Josh Allen threw a pick six in the first half? I mean, it's not like it's something that would be that wacky for him to do it.
No, I would not. I had the team total under in the Jets game when they played at Foxborough, and then I had the pick six and the muffed punt in the end zone. So those, even if the offense isn't going to do anything, you can still lose those.
Yeah, and there's just not as much margin for error. Like I said, if you play under a really low number, one goofy play like that can determine your whole bet.
Yeah, no doubt. So that's a good point. So I would stay away, but it's definitely my survivor pool. Are you still alive in some survivor pools?
I didn't do any survivor pools this year. But yes, I think if you're out there, you're going to probably want to use Buffalo this week. I don't think the Bills are going to be a 17-point favorite again, so I don't think there's any reason to save them.
Yeah, someone was telling me that they want to use them in a couple weeks, but I think you got to grab them when you can. And there's no other good
you
options.
You got to survive in advance, man.
I'm in a pool with seven people left. Last week, nine people left. Four had the Packers on Monday night. How's that for?
Wow.
And then also someone had the Redskins at the Dolphins, so that was bold.
That was bold. He could have easily lost that.
Yeah. So this is it's not a small pool, let's put it that way, and a lot of people have already been eliminated.
Well, there was no other opportunity to use the Redskins this year, so maybe that was his thought process.
Minnesota at Detroit. Interesting game, given with the Lions' short week, emotional, like whatever you want to call it, the narrative there in terms of the referees. Unfortunate calls down the stretch against the Lions, and Vikes laying 1.5 here. I like Minnesota, I think, in this spot.
I don't know what those illegal hands to the face calls were. I got nothing. I mean, I don't want to say anything that'll get me in trouble. I don't know what's going on with the NFL. The officials just have way too much influence on the outcome of these games.
It's pretty remarkable. If you want to break it down, the guy's wearing blue gloves. It's not like, you know, it's hard to see because it's like skin on skin. Like, it's blue gloves. I mean, he's wearing these like hamburger helper things, and you can't, like, it's pretty easy to locate where the hands are. On a white
you
jersey.
Think.
On a white jersey,
you
right? That's
think.
What the Packers were wearing?
Yeah. God. Didn't it happen twice, though? I was
twice.
Watching NLCS Game 3. I wasn't really – like, I just turned into the very end of the NFL game.
Yeah, I gave you a shout-out. Sorry, Mr. Executive Director. I gave you a shout-out yesterday in the pod. I said you couldn't make the pod. You were recovering from celebrating.
I wish I was. I was over at the convention center all day. That would have been great if I could have been doing that.
Congratulations. I told you guys are going to win, and I called the Cardinals a bit of a farce in my write-up for ESPN.com. Some Twitter guy called me a buffoon. saying the Cardinals were a farce.
I got the okay yesterday from the GM of our property. She told me it's fine to go home for game 3 next weekend. So
greenlit.
I'll be in D.C. Yeah, I'll be in D.C. Game 3 is next Friday night at Nationals Park. So regardless of the opponent, games 1 and 2 are at the AL Park, and then game 3 will be back in D.C. So I'm going to go to that one on next Friday.
If you go to game 1 or 2 in New York, if the Yankees advance, I'll meet you there.
Yeah, we've had discussions about that. A woman I work with has a good in for Yankee tickets, so I'm not ruling it out. Let's just say that.
All right, we could do a little remote pod, maybe.
That'd be great. That'd be how fun would that be?
Yeah,
a World Series game at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. That would be very cool. That would be very, very cool.
Yeah, I had my heart set on it for the Dodgers. Yeah. I was kind of visualizing it. I was playing this game with myself because last year I went to Fenway, driving distance as well. So I'm thinking, maybe back-to-back years. I got to go to a Dodgers World Series game and not have to fly across country.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to fly across country to go either way, but it's fine. Yeah, I'm not going to complain. The fact that, to think that 14 years ago, me and my brother were sitting there at RFK Stadium watching just the worst baseball you could ever imagine in a football stadium, and now we're going to be going to the World Series is pretty cool.
Well, they're loaded. There's no doubt about that. Yeah, they are a very good team. So congrats to there. So, we got
Vikings Lions. The Vikings is going to be public's going to be on the Vikings. They love they love these situations. The cheap road favorite, and Minnesota's off of a very impressive win over Philadelphia. Got to give Minnesota a lot of credit for that win last week. So we're definitely going to need the Lions in this game. Detroit also probably be a sharp teaser play going up through 3-7 and a relatively low total of 44.5.
I'm not sure where I stand on the Vikings. I might have to just martingale them the rest of the year because they're going to cover. Like they are just Jekyll and Hyde. Instead of trying to figure them out, just know that they're going to get you a great game at some point because they have the talent on paper.
I'm always nervous about Kirk Cousins. That game is a big pass for me, man.
Fair point. All right, you got some sharp money driving this number down. This one was, what, 7 as an opener? The Packers over the Raiders. I was all about Green Bay if they had lost that game, just because it was such a lethargic game, all that stuff. But here come the Raiders, a little bit more competent than we expected. And now
you
the
love
numbers,
these.
Numbers down to 4.5 at your shop.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You love these. All the bets are on Green Bay here. All the tickets are on Green Bay. And this number has crashed from 6.5 to 4.5.
Yeah.
I know you love these reverse line movement spots. This is absolutely reverse line movement. Everybody's betting the Packers, and the number is crashing. So certainly a good sign if you're looking to back the Raiders this week. I think the value is gone at +4.5, and I wouldn't suggest playing them at +4.5. But earlier in the week, the Raiders were definitely a very sharp NFL side.
Yeah, that's my thought process exactly. I can't back the Raiders. There's just too much history there because they didn't play that great against the Bears. The Bears are just atrocious. And after halftime, the Bears came out and scored three straight touchdowns. So we know the Raiders
Chase Daniel was really bad in that game.
I think the whole team was really flat. I think they overlooked the Raiders. I just think when you're down 17-0 at half, but we saw how inferior the Raiders can be to an opponent that's of quality when they gave up 3 touchdowns right away.
Yeah, there's no doubt, and that was a huge win for the books. We were getting annoyed there. It looks like the Raiders were going to just dump that game away to the Bears, but they came back for us.
They really should have covered because they had the punt, and Tariq Cohen returned it to midfield with 6 minutes to go, and that had field goal written all over it. But then they
could have covered, but the Raiders were. I mean, there was a terrible call in that game where the Raiders intercepted a pass, and they called like roughing the passer on Maurice Hurst. It was a laughable call. So, I mean, I think the correct side covered in that game.
Oh, no doubt. No. But I'm saying that cover was really in jeopardy. Like, they had a chance.
Oh, no, I agree with that.
A legit
chance. I agree.
Like, it had all the makings of a field goal. But, no, the right side was the Raiders all along, for sure.
Okay, I agree.
All right, we'll continue with the NFL card momentarily. Mr. Executive Director is not going anywhere. We also have Mike Clay coming up in a little bit. But first, a quick break. Jacksonville, Cincinnati. I got this at 3. It's up to 3.5. I think this is a get-right game for the Jaguars. Cincy stinks. They really stink. That game last week, they had the opening kickoff returned. That was 7. Then Ravens are driving at the end of the first half. One of the guys tries to hurdle a guy in the midfield. His knee hits the ball up in the air. And the Bengals get the ball and then only get 3 points when they get the ball in field goal range. And then they get the garbage touchdown. So this Bengals team they covered last week, but they're not really doing anything still. I think the Jaguars just work them. I think this is like 23-6 written all over it.
Jacksonville, they got the cloud of Jalen Ramsey gone now. They don't have to worry about that distraction anymore. Certainly, the Bengals are awful. I agree with everything you said about them. Again, I know I've said this about a few other games, but it's true of this game, too. Not going to be a really high-volume game. I do think we'll need Cincinnati just because the public likes to lay 3.5 points on the road against an 0-6 team. but I don't think the public is going to be in a big rush to bet Jacksonville.
If Jacksonville had won last week, let's say a couple of those like third downs
different.
Last week, you know, let's just say Teddy Bridgewater doesn't convert one, Minshew does, and it's like a 13-6 win for the Jags. What is this line?
Well, it's probably more like 4.5, and the public would be coming in on Jacksonville pretty aggressively. And Jacksonville, I watched most of that game. Like they had some first and goals like around the 5-yard line that they didn't cash in, and that's why they lost. Their defense actually played very well against Bridgewater and the Saints' offense.
So that's my point, is typically in the NFL, you want to bet on the team that didn't play well, right? So the line would be higher if they played well, which is not the time you want to back them. They'd be kind of fat and happy off the big win going to lowly Cincinnati. But now they're off a loss going to lowly Cincinnati, and you want to bet on them, and the line's lower than it would be.
Yeah, those are all fair points, and certainly you could argue the value is there on Jacksonville. I definitely wouldn't want to bet on Cincinnati, that's for sure.
Rams and Atlanta. I'm on the Rams. This is the get-right game. I don't like that it's 1 o'clock Eastern, but yeah. I mean, this Falcons team, I'm sorry, I'm done. I'm done with the Falcons.
Here's one of the games at 10 a.m. local time that will be a high-volume game. There's been a lot of money, actually, both ways on this game. Now, the ticket count is pretty one-sided on the Rams, but there have been some bigger bets come in on Atlanta. We're going to need the Rams when this thing – or I'm sorry, we're going to need Atlanta big when this thing kicks off, though. I think the public will come in on the Rams. Everybody's looking to fade Dan Quinn and the Falcons right now, and I don't blame them. I think this will be one of our biggest decisions at 10 a.m., probably our second biggest decision at 10 a.m., and the biggest one you can probably guess. The very next game.
I was about to say, okay, that must be the next game.
Yeah, no, everybody's on the 49ers.
I'll say this about the Rams, we'll get to, because obviously the Niners looked great. Obviously, that was a nice, impressive win. But if the Rams punch it in, and again, maybe I'm a little bitter. I was on the Rams last week. But if the Rams punch it in, they go up 14-7, okay? Like, that's a different game. So it's fourth and goal, and they didn't get it. Even so, it was tied at half, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't remember that far back.
They started the second half with the ball. Okay.
Okay. I didn't watch any of that game, just so you know.
Yeah, the first play from scrimmage after their touchback or whatever, after the return, was that one of those pitches, just like the Raiders did in London, where they turn around and pitch it like hyper, you know, ludicrous speed, and then there's a fumble, and the Niners get the ball. So if they don't do that stupid fumble, just punt. Who knows how this game plays out?
Yeah, but I mean, I looked at the box score. I watched a little bit of the game, I'll say. It looked like the 49ers defense was pretty suffocating.
Right. No. It was, again, if they just punch it in instead of like getting stopped short, Frank Costanza style, and then don't just pitch fumble.
I stop short. That's my move.
And don't just pitch fumble. I'm just saying it's maybe a field goal win by the Rams or society. The Niners weren't dominant. That's my point. The Niners were not dominant. They got gifted a touchdown to start the third quarter.
You don't think their defense was dominant in that
game?
I didn't watch that game, but I looked at the box scores, and the numbers would indicate that the Niners' defense was very dominant.
I would agree with that.
I don't know about offensively, but it sounds like the Niners have all kinds of young, fast guys on their D right now. It's an impressive unit.
I would agree with that. No, I like the Niners' defense a lot. I just think we're not – that game could have gone. Anyway, so I'm banking on the Rams kind of getting back on track this time. Last week,
I'm not going to argue with you betting against Dan Quinn. I think that Falcons team has quit on Dan Quinn.
I mean, it's amazing the numbers that Matt Ryan put up last week in a loss. So,
yeah.
The next game, is the game you're going to need. Big road chalk here. San Francisco laying 9.5 against the Redskins. Both teams off big wins.
Oh, yeah. No, it has all the ingredients, too. I mean, the 49ers are undefeated. They're laying points on the road. The Redskins are awful. I mean, the public, they're not even going to care what the point spread is. They'd be laying 11 and 12 if we asked them to. I mean, this is going to be a hugely one-sided bet game. And the books around the whole country are going to need Washington to cover this game.
What would the line be if the Dolphins had converted that two-point conversion?
I think it would still be around 10. I don't know that. I mean, Washington was the right side in that game against Miami. They just gave up 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter. I don't think it would change that much. The Redskins were in complete control that entire game on Sunday.
I think it would be 12.
Nah, it wouldn't go that high because the 49ers don't really have much of an offense. The 49ers aren't the narrative of this team being
0-7 or 0-6 and lost to the Dolphins. They're terrible.
San Francisco, to be laying points like that on the road, usually you have to have a pretty high – to be laying that many points, you need to have a really high-scoring offense or be playing the Miami Dolphins is really what it comes down to.
Which is not happening in either situation on this game.
Right.
Okay, we go to the 4 o'clock games. What did you make – see, I thought the Chargers did the right thing. I was okay with it. So we talked about Bill O'Brien earlier in the podcast going for it on fourth and short in, like, long field goal territory to ice the game. And I think they were up 5, so that would have made it an 8-point game. In this case, the Chargers were facing the Steelers, where the Steelers could have done a long field goal to make it, I believe, 10. But they ended up punting. And I actually said, you don't kick the field goal. You either punt or go for it. I was okay with the punt because the Chargers were out of timeouts. And that was a beautiful punt. Now, thankfully, it wasn't a touchback. But they did it on the one, and that forced Rivers into these Hail Mary throws.
Yeah, you're talking about at the very end of the game?
Yeah, when Tomlin decided to punt. I thought it was punt or go. I would not have kicked the field goal at all.
Definitely wouldn't have kicked the field goal. So I agree with you there. And the punt probably was the right decision. I probably would have gone for it because I'm crazy.
With a third-string quarterback who was looking kind of inept in the second half?
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. But I would. I don't know. I probably would have still gone for it. But I certainly wouldn't have kicked the field goal. I'm with you on that.
Nice. So the Chargers, they were down 3 offensive linemen, including their center, Pouncey, last week. And the sharp money was on the Steelers, rightfully so. This was like a total square play. It was Chargers against a third-string quarterback. But that offensive line, those injuries really proved, because you had Rivers throwing that rushed sort of tipped pick, and then also the lateral. So that was the pressure was what really changed the game in the first quarter.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I was watching baseball. I didn't actually watch any of the football game until the baseball game ended. But I was keeping an eye on the score. We needed the Steelers pretty big, obviously.
So about this game, going to Tennessee, so the Chargers are getting points against Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, and actually the sharp money is on Tennessee in this spot for sure. I mean, we saw sharp guys laying 1.5. This was the play that I did give to Brent Musburger yesterday. I didn't do it the show myself, but it was the play that we gave to Brent Musburger this week was Tennessee. The Super Contest line is -2.5, and that's the line here in the sports book.
I think that's the right side here. I really think that's the right call. I think Tannehill's more competent than Mariota, even though Tannehill's still shaky. And this Titans defense, although I will say this, just careful here, Murray. You might want to give a little heads up to Musburger. The underdog has won outright in every single Tennessee Titans game this year.
Is that true? Yeah, I know. I liked the Bills at Tennessee a couple weeks ago. But the Bills are – the difference between the Bills and the Chargers is the Bills have a great defense and they're very well coached. You can't say either of those things about the Chargers right now.
Oh, so I might be mistaken. Last week, the Broncos went off as a 1-point favorite?
Yeah. That was one where – yeah, you're correct. And that was one where we saw sharp money come in on Tennessee for sure.
And the Broncos won. So that was the first time. They were minus one.
Oh, yeah. There was a 1-point spread. Yeah, you're right. But, yeah, that was one where we saw sharp money coming in on the Titans, no doubt. And they finally made the move. They had to bench Mariota. He's just not getting it done for them. I'm not saying I think Tannehill is going to go in there and light the world on fire. And I don't think the whole thing is only Mariota's fault. But there gets to a point where you're in your fifth year, you're the second overall pick, and you're still playing this poorly. They got to do something.
The next game, it feels like it's a trap because the line should be higher. Baltimore at Seattle.
Yeah, and this is when we've seen sharp money come in on the dog here, actually. And I'm kind of surprised by that myself just because all the Ravens have really done this year is beat up on bad teams. They've just been bullies, beating up on the Cardinals, beating up on the Bengals, the Dolphins. I know they beat the Steelers in a game that they were pretty fortunate to win against a third-string quarterback entering into that game. So it's not like Baltimore has any impressive wins on their resume this season.
That's my exact point. This Ravens defense is also terrible.
Yeah. So if they do win this game, it would really be their first impressive performance of the season to date. No question about that.
But Seattle is so shaky as a favorite.
I'm not going against Seattle again. I mean, I thought that was such a bad spot for them on Sunday against Cleveland. I thought it was a terrible spot for them, and they fell behind on the road, and they rallied back to win that game. What can you even say about
Russell
Wilson?
It was a bad spot. It's the Mayfield pick. Did it? Oh, I mean, that was the big one at the end of the first half.
No, I know. No, you're right. But you still got to give Russell Wilson credit for engineering that late touchdown drive to steal that game on the road. It's very impressive stuff from Russell Wilson. He's now the MVP favorite of the Super Bowl at 2-1.
Yeah, it's remarkable what's happened with Mahomes being. He was odds on at one point, right? It was minus like 150, minus $2.
I don't think we ever got quite that high, but we definitely had him at minus money. We had a guy laid 20,000 at minus 110, and I believe we moved it to minus a quarter at that point. I don't remember exactly. I don't think it ever got quite as high as minus 200, but certainly he was minus money, no doubt about that.
20 large at like week 3 on the MVP.
Yeah, and it was just sort of picking the wrong time in the case of that gentleman, because we, you know, then Russell Wilson had the great Thursday night game against the Rams. We all remember that game. And then followed that up with some disappointing performances from Mahomes. I think some of it is out of his control in terms of injuries on his team and injuries to himself. But still, he hasn't been playing at the level he normally plays at. That's certain.
All right. Well, I'm on Seattle there, and I'll be on him in a bonanza as well.
Okay.
Another good 4 p.m. late game. By the way, the 405. Can we do away with the 405, Murray? You got some connections. Call good.
I think they should all be like 435.
That's my
point. It'd be much better for
us.
This
405 thing is just, it sneaks up on me because some of my bets are coming down to the wire here, and I don't know. Maybe I might have to take advantage of the if-when bets or something, whatever there are.
Well,
have you ever done the if-when
bet? It doesn't really make, we don't have those in Nevada.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you've heard of them.
I know what they are. But I don't understand why they move, like, a few years ago, the NFL made that decision to start playing some of their games at 4:25 Eastern instead of, remember, they used to be at 4:15?
Right.
And my question is, why didn't they then just move all of them to 4:25?
I don't know why the Tennessee game has to start at 4:05.
I don't get it. And it's bad for handle, I can tell you that much. I mean, I remember one week we had a scenario, I think it was 2 weeks ago, where there was only two games in the afternoon, and one of them was at 1:05, which was too early for us to write the money we wanted to write. And then the other one was at 1:25. So there was really only one game that guys could bet on after they cashed their early game tickets, and it was really bad for handle. And that game was awful, too. It was that Dallas-Green Bay game.
Well, it's annoying.
I'm all for
get on.
I'd rather have all the afternoon games later. I mean, you want to call it 4:25? How about 4:45? I mean, I want people to have as much time as possible after the morning games to bet the afternoon games.
That's a good point. You're a man of the people. You are a man of the people. So the next game.
I am.
Also really interesting. Bears off the bye in London, laying 3.5, and the 3's heavily juiced in the market against this New Orleans team that I'm done trying to bet against. I'm sorry. I'm just done fading Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, you might like this, though. This is kind of a public dog play right now. We got about a 3.5 to 1 ticket count on the Saints in this spot. So most of the money is coming in on New Orleans. I know you like to play against those public dog picks.
I do. I think this is the game where Bridgewater would, like, be completely inept.
This might be the best. Yeah, that's a really tough spot for Bridgewater going on the road against that Chicago defense coming off of its bye week.
And
this might end up being the biggest handle game of the week. I think this is the biggest handle Sunday game. I think the Monday night game is going to be a monster handle game. But I think this Saints-Bears game, given the time slot and how high profile the Bears are, I think this will be the biggest handle game of Sunday.
And have you taken sharp money here?
I wouldn't call it sharp money. It's just all the money's coming in on New Orleans so far.
Has the line moved?
Yeah, I mean, that's just us moving with the market. Okay. I mean, you got to remember, just because we didn't take any sharp money on the Raiders, but we just moved with the market down with the Raiders.
Right. So that's what I was asking. My favorite is the reverse line movement of.
Oh, I know that's your favorite, but the Raiders would
and then
be
with the lines moving the other way.
Raiders would be reverse line movement game for sure.
Interesting. So it is. It is.
Everybody's betting on Green Bay. The number's going down, so yeah.
Correct. Hold on a sec. So you're saying, let's start over. So you're saying that everybody's betting on Green Bay with the lines, right? So that's reverse line movement on a favorite.
Oh, you like it on the you like
I
it
like
on
the other way. When there's overwhelming amount on the dog and the line's going up.
Well, that's something that only happens a couple times a year.
Correct.
If you're lucky.
Correct.
When it does.
Alabama Clemson from a couple years ago in the semifinals.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Oh, God, yeah, that was a big one. That only happens a few times a year. But when it does, yes, you're in a good spot if you're taking the favorite.
So I thought that's what you were insinuating with the Saints. Bears, because
you said
the public's on the Saints, so I thought it was like I misunderstood you, so I apologize.
Everybody's on the Saints right now. That's all.
Right, and that's why I asked, was the line going up? Right.
Like we saw that with the New Orleans-Tampa Bay game 2 weeks ago. Just everybody was on Tampa Bay, the sharps and the squares. So sometimes the number, just everybody's on one side. And so far, it's only Thursday morning, but so far New Orleans looks like that.
Yeah, I have a feeling I'm going to be on like a team total or something. Under first half, something, one of those specialties. You think this will be, that'll be the most heavily bet, huh?
Yeah, because there's not that much money on the Dallas-Philadelphia game. Both those teams are coming off of really bad losses, and I don't think there's as much interest in that game as there normally would be. And that 125 time slot, I don't think Chargers-Titans will be a big bet game. Baltimore-Seattle will get some of the attention, but the big focus in the afternoon is going to be on New Orleans and Chicago.
Copy. All right, man, let's go to the Sunday night game. The guarantee from Doug Peterson. Not really. I appreciated what he said, and I appreciated what he said afterwards as well. It's like, look, guys, it's not a guarantee. I'm just kind of just coach speak, you know, and I think that's fair. Dallas, a flat three. Not flat, minus three flat at home here with the Eagles in town.
Yeah, not a whole lot here in terms of betting. There's a few more tickets on Philadelphia. My guess is we'll probably need Philadelphia when the thing kicks off because I think some money line parlays will close with Dallas just because they're favored in the Sunday night game. But as of right now, not really setting up to be a high-volume game as far as Sunday night games go. I mean, it'll be one of the bigger bet games of the day just because it's the night game. But as far as like relative to other Sunday night games we've had earlier in the year, the volume hasn't been too high yet.
It's a fascinating game, just given what's happened with the Cowboys three straight weeks. And I maintain that home game against the Packers, opening drive for Dallas, Prescott hits Cooper in the numbers or maybe a little bit behind him on the left shoulder pad and goes up in the air, picked. And then they even got back in the game when they were setting up a first and goal situation. They called a wide receiver hold that was called back. Now, obviously, the Packers took their foot off the gas in the second half because they were up big. But that game was a lot closer than – or should have been a lot closer than the game unfolded. This Dallas team,
they need to get their offensive line guys back.
Yeah,
Dallas
is
not going anywhere with their offensive line guys on the sidelines. And we can talk about Kellen Moore, and we can talk about Dak Prescott, but until they get those offensive line guys back, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, that was a big split of pros versus Joes last week, wasn't it?
Oh, for sure. The Jets are the team right now that I think a lot of sharper guys are looking to back just because they're 1-4, so they're really an undervalued team because of their win-loss record, and they've got some really good pieces on their defense, and now they're getting NFL quarterback play again. So the Jets were a super popular pick yesterday. Or last week.
Last week. And that went from 9.5 to 7.
Sharp guys.
7 was way too high, too. So let's go to the Jets game, the last game of the board, Monday Nighter.
I think it's going to be the highest volume game of the week, which that used to be the case with Monday night games. I'm sure you remember that back in the day. But in recent years, the Sunday night game has really become the big bailout game for everybody and the biggest volume game almost every week. But I think this week it's going to be this Sunday night game. You know the public – or Monday night game. You know the public is going to be all over New England, right? I mean, that's for sure. But I do expect to see some sharper players taking the points here with New York. And they already did when we had plus 10 earlier in the week.
As we've discussed here on the pod, I've been itching to fade the Patriots. Couldn't quite pull the trigger last week. Thankfully, I did not, even though the Giants were the right side for majority of the game. This might be the time where I fade the Pats. I just think their offense is a little off, whether it be Brady showing his age, the injuries mounting. This team has really benefited from an easy schedule. Now, I'm not saying they're a bad team. They are a great team. But are they the best? Should they be laying 9.5 on the road here? That is the question. I definitely leaning Jets here.
I've been criticizing Brady a little bit in the media because I think he's mostly just throwing checkdowns and dumping it off over the middle. But I'm going to say this in his defense. They've had a lot of guys hurt on their offense so far this year. So I wouldn't put it all on Brady. But certainly the Patriots' offense hasn't been very impressive this year. And they're going up against a very tough New York defense on Monday night. The Jets' defense Jamal Adams is an absolute stud player. Greg Williams doing a really good job there with that defense. Keep an eye on the Jets here. Definitely going to be a pros versus Joes type game, but the Joes smoked the pros last week, so maybe it'll happen again.
Team total of like 27 for the Patriots, it looks like.
Yeah, but
26.
And they might, but they might get there. Just, you know, they get one turnover. They get, you know, Brady. They run that pick play where they screen the defender and the receiver comes wide open and they get a touchdown. I mean, yeah, I'm done counting out New England. Belichick is just so much smarter than the other coaches that even when his players are older or not as talented, he'll just out scheme you anyway and get it done.
Yeah, there's other things to do with your money than to try to bet against Bill Belichick.
That's basically where I'm at, yes.
Okay. All right, buddy. You ready to get to it?
Sure.
All right.
It's time for Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Okay, the Russian is cut after that tear you were on.
Yeah.
0-2 last week. So that happens. That happens.
Yeah, Cleveland and Jacksonville. I like both those sides, too. It just is what it is, man. What are you going to do?
What can you do? It's the NFL. It's the pain that we know as the NFL betting.
I'm going to give you two more this week, though. I'm going to try to come back with a 2-0 week to make up for last week.
Well, I won my first quarter bet, but...
Yeah, that's true. The Giants game?
Send in a tweet of a prop bet that did not get there. So I actually lost 150 for the week. What's funny is my best bet was another prop, and somehow I didn't like tweet that in or anything. It was over receptions for James White, over 4.5, and he got there by halftime.
You know what you need? You need like a personal assistant to organize all this stuff for you, man. Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I have, actually.
You know what you should get? You should get an intern. One of the girls I work with here at the Superbook, she was like, you know what you should do? You should get an intern. I bet some kid from UNLV would love to just come and be the intern to the director of the Superbook. And it might be true, actually. And we wouldn't have to pay that kid. And I could make references to Darren from Seinfeld that there's no chance the kid would understand. So there's a lot of – I'm really considering that internship program.
Well, I did that when I was at Channel 13 in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I did that, and I had 5 interns over 7 years there.
And was it anything as funny as Darren?
No, they actually all went and got jobs in the market. So I did a nice job of grooming them. But yeah, no, it's great. And
it sounds funny.
I need to maybe get
a high tea with a Mr. Newman. Yeah,
maybe an offsite. Do you think I can get a UConn intern who will never step foot on campus? ESPN, you can like do work for ESPN, but never like get the benefits of going there.
I think somebody would be interested in it. I really do. We really need to look into that. If Kramer and Kramerica Industries can have an intern, I don't see any reason why Behind the Bets can't have an intern.
It's a great idea. I'm actually going to make some phone calls. It's a great idea.
If you had an intern, you could have him make the phone calls. You wouldn't even have to do anything. Him or her. I mean, whatever.
I love what you said.
I'm open to anything.
Your intern would have no idea what to get the references because they were born in the century.
No.
They were born
No,
in the
they would never understand the references of a couple of old guys like us talking about Seinfeld here in 2019.
Well, I still have some room to catch up. You're on the tee box first because you are still in the lead. So why don't you fire away?
Sure. I'm going to go with – I kind of talked myself into it while we were discussing the game earlier in the show. I'm going to go with the Colts -1. They're at home against Houston. The Colts coming off their bye. They're getting healthier defensively. I'll take the Colts -1 for 550 to win 5.
That's bold.
I'm a bold man, though. I'm a bold, aggressive individual.
All right. So I'm on – there's two games I like. I'll take the Rams -3, -110 for a nickel. I like them. We talked about it earlier. I'm not saying it's a must win, but it kind of is. And Jalen Ramsey's going to play –
Oh, I'll say it. Hold on. I'm sorry to interrupt you on your play. I'll say that it's a must-win if you want me to. This is a must-win for the Rams.
If they lose and they go to 3-4, they're done.
I think so. I mean, the 49ers are going to be 6-0 on Sunday night, right?
Yeah, I'm not.
So,
I'm thinking wild card for them already for the Rams.
The wild card. Okay, that's fair. But, I mean, the NFC is really deep this season. So I think if the Rams lose this game to Atlanta, they are done. So you can call it a must-win.
Okay. You just did. I like it. So give me the Rams for a nickel.
Okay, my other one is the play you already know about. It's the play we gave Mr. Musburger yesterday on VSiN. Tennessee -2.5 at home against the Chargers. it's just a Chargers fade. There's not much to like about Tennessee. They may be rejuvenated, switching from Mariota to Tannehill. It's possible. But it's really just a fade of a Chargers team that looks completely done.
Okay. I will do the Seahawks, as I mentioned. It's -3, -20, right?
Yes, sir.
I will do a dime on the Seattle Seahawks.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Turn the knob a little bit.
Let's go. Okay. That perked me up a little bit. I'm excited.
And
good afternoon games this Sunday. The afternoon games look pretty good. And I think the Monday night game looks very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, well, we can always have Twitter. We can always have Twitter. You can maybe reach out to the Prince of Props as well.
I was planning to debut him over Thanksgiving weekend, but I'll probably see him next Friday when I'm in D.C. for the baseball game.
I was just about to ask that. Will you see him in D.C.?
Yeah. That's very possible. I got to talk to him and figure that out. But certainly a strong possibility I'll run into him next Friday night in Nationals Park. If you see me next Friday at Nationals Park, don't come over and say hi, because I'm going to be in a state of mind that I don't want to be seen in public. Like me and my brother are going to be having some fun on Friday. We're very excited, man. We've been following this team this is the 15th season of the team, so I'm not going to pretend like we're like the Cubs or the Red Sox that suffered for generations. But we definitely suffered through some long years and some playoff heartbreak, so we're very excited to be in the World Series.
Who was your team before the Nats?
Great question. I was just talking to Gil Alexander from VSiN about this. We didn't really have a team. Me and my brother didn't really grow up. There was never a time in our household where we rooted for the Orioles. We just didn't have a baseball team. A lot of people that I knew growing up were Braves fans because they were on TBS, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
So you could watch all their games. But my brother and I never followed a baseball team. And I remember following it when it sounded like the Expos were going to move to D.C. and being so excited and being like, oh, dude, we got to throw ourselves into this now and become fans of this new baseball team here in D.C. And now they could be playing the Yankees in the World Series. That would be pretty cool.
Okay. Well, good stuff. Let me know via Twitter if you have any plays. I think we're going to get involved tonight here, Murray. I think we're going to go 2 dimes on the Chiefs -3.
Oh, so now you do have a play.
Well, we're going to play it back. I think we're going to do a little middle.
But that is an official play.
That is an official play, right. So we're going to have sorry. What I was saying is I'm going to have a playback on Twitter.
Oh,
so
I got you.
We're setting it up at the -3 right now with 2K. So we'll take it a position, as we like to say.
I love it. I'm good with it.
Got to throw some Hail Marys to get back in the game. Can't wait till I know. But hey, we just talked about clock management earlier. How these coaches always think stay alive with the Kate Fagan theory. We're seizing the opportunity now. Dictate the terms.
Kate Fagan is brilliant, and hopefully we have a brilliant weekend here in the NFL. Pick up a few winners.
All right, my man. Well, good luck to you. Nats are not needed. Good luck. They already punched their ticket to Tuesday, I believe, is game one.
Yeah, game one Tuesday, game two Wednesday in the American League Park. So right. I'll be keeping an eye on that.
All right, well, we'll get you back here next week. Best of luck the rest of the way at the G2E in the suit that you are.
I appreciate it. I'll talk to you next week.
All right.
This has been Baby Bankroll Bonanza.
Nerd alert!
Mike Clay in studio here, back from his 1 week hiatus under the weather, Mike.
Yeah, that was my bye week.
Well done. Are you feeling better, my man?
I'm mostly back. I'd say I'm like 95% probable for the weekend.
Yeah.
Looking good. So,
yeah. All right. So upgraded from questionable.
Yes, indeed.
Well, your spreadsheets don't get sick, but we needed you here to communicate your findings. So nice little bye week, recharge. Is there an adjustment to your numbers off the bye week at all?
Not really. It's just everything's running a little smoother. Reset everything, the connection, everything's a little faster. So well, we're coming off a good week, though. 2 weeks ago, we had a really good week. I think we were like 5-2, something like that. So we're hot going into the bye. We're coming off the bye. Hopefully we'll be fresh here.
Well, let's keep it going here because a lot of fun props anytime the Chiefs are involved on this Thursday night. You have one play for us. Fire away.
I do, and I love this one. Travis Kelce to find the end zone, a receiving touchdown, is +$1.45, which kind of blew my socks off. So I jumped on that one right away. The reason it's so low, he only has one touchdown this season in 6 games. But if you look a little deeper, you see that his usage hasn't really changed from last season. His expected touchdown total is 3.3, which is 19th highest in the NFL. That's based on the volume of targets, where they're located. Are they near the end zone? And the answer is yes to that question. 5 end zone targets, that's tied for 6th. In the NFL, he hasn't caught any of them again, just bad luck. 47% was his career hit rate on end zone targets in his career. Again, he's 0 for 5 so far. We know he had 10 touchdowns last season. He was 14th in the league in end zone targets last year. He's still averaging 8.2 targets per game, still a huge part of this offense. If there's a red flag here, Broncos defense has only allowed 4 touchdowns this season, though. Kelce did score in both games against them last year. So this is one that I feel pretty good at plus $1.45. I think there's a decent chance he gets in the end zone.
So question for you is, it seems like the script that's out there or whatever, the copycat league, is that they're going a lot of ball control against the Chiefs, keeping Mahomes off the field, and then his banged up ankle. And so is it fewer? I mean, what does your model have in terms of just number of possessions and the way these games are going now since the Colts got there?
Yeah, for the most part, they're still kind of hanging in there in terms of plays per game. They are also, and this is really important, the pass heaviest offense in the NFL.
Right.
So even if you are running fewer plays, you're still maybe only running 10 or 12 times, and that's still going to keep Patrick Mahomes in the 30s in pass attempts. So that's kind of bailed him out. Again, Andy Reid's not afraid to throw the ball. We saw last season, last week, Damian Williams had one carry in the game. You know,
right.
You saw, I think, Shady McCoy had like 9. They just choose not to run the ball if they don't have to. It's still the Mahomes offense. And they're scoring touchdowns, too. That's another thing. I mean, he had
Yeah, Mahomes
three
got
last
hurt,
week.
Too, in the game. So yeah. He was fine. He threw that long pass on a free play to Tyreek Hill. They looked good in the first half at 17 points, I want to say.
Yeah.
But I wonder how the defenses are playing Kelce as well. I think they're, like, guarding him tighter now. And he's drawing penalties even, too.
Sure. But still, over 8 targets a game, still 5 end zone targets. I mean, the goal line work is there. It's just they haven't converted. You know, they've only converted. Well, they did once. But I think it's one of those things. The longer you look at this sort of data usage, you see it regress to the mean over and
good.
Over. And it's like a 90%+ hit rate on stuff like this.
Gotcha. So plus think, 145.
Plus 145. I mean, look, if it was even money, I might not be as interested, but plus $1.45 just to score one touchdown for Travis Kelce, absolutely.
Yeah, one receiving touchdown. You got the shovel pass maybe around the goal line.
Yeah,
too.
I'll take it. Whatever works.
Let's go to you have another tight end for Sunday night.
I do. Zach Ertz. I'm actually going under here. In fact, it's kind of good timing here. The line here is 63.5 yards at minus $1.10. He's complaining about double teams, right? Like defenses are all over him, and it has shown up. I have met 57 yards on 8 targets in this game. He's actually been under this line in 8 of his past 12 games going back to last season. So we've already seen that number fall a little bit from his dominance early last season. He's averaging a career low 6.8 yards per target and has a 61% catch rate this season. Again, both of those career lows. Dallas defense has been pretty good against passing games so far. The 9th lowest yards per attempt at 6.9. Dallas also doing a pretty good job against tight ends. Only one tight end, Evan Ingram, has cleared 41 yards against him this season. We're seeing more Dallas Goedert involved here. I know DeSean Jackson's not going to play, but I think 8 targets is a fair number for Zach Ertz. And again, at his efficiency projection, that comes in at 57 yards, a little bit under here.
All right, good stuff. Let's go to Monday night. You have 2 props for us. This is good because I know everybody's going to want to watch this game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the over on Tom Brady's completions. This one definitely jumped out. It's 24.5 at minus $1.10. My projection comes in at 27.
I like this too.
On 41 attempts. So I like this one a lot. He's been over 3 of his past 4 games, including 28 against the Jets, which that was a comfortable win. Still, 28 completions in that game. He's top 8 in dropbacks, pass attempts, completions this season. They, remember, after being pass heavy the whole Tom Brady, Bill Belichick era, they went run heavy, game script adjusted last season. That kind of came out of nowhere. It's gone. Like, that's a thing in the past. They are the number 2 pass heaviest offense in the NFL this season when you adjust for game script. So, again, we would expect them to throw the ball plenty against the Jets defense that has been good against the run, as we'll get to in a second, but not very good against the pass. 9th most pass attempts against and the 12th most completions against on a per-game basis. Teams attack them through the air. We've seen that all season long. I expect the Patriots to do the same.
I would say I definitely like the over completions, not the over yards. This is a dink and dunk. Talked about it with Vegas expert connoisseur mm-hmm. John Murray earlier in the podcast, that this is a lot of like checkdowns and things like that. Oh, and yeah. This game is going to be a lot closer. I shouldn't say a lot because the line's 9.5, but a lot closer than a lot of these other games for the Patriots, whether it be the Giants game, where they're just trying to chew clock at the end,
agreed.
The Dolphins, the Jets game, the first meeting he was pulled because it was such a blowout. So this game with Darnold back, with the defensive guys back for the Jets, figures to be having to throw, you know, either to get the first down to take a knee, or maybe they're even in a tie game.
Yeah, and Josh Gordon probably not going to play. So, and we'll see if Rex Burkhead plays, but we're seeing a target share for James White over 20%. I mean, a lot of that's going to be in the short area. They're using Ryan Izzo a little bit more. Again, he's going to be a short area target. Julian Edelman, obviously, a short and intermediate target. So, no doubt about it. I think
what's James White's props for receptions off the top of your head?
I don't know. I would guess it's probably in the 4.5 range, somewhere around there.
Don't you have to go over there?
I would go over that, yeah. I have to be... I mean, I could pull it up, you know, but... I generally, you want to take the over. The only way I would be nervous on that would be if Rex Burkhead is going to play.
Gotcha.
Because he's been mixed in quite a bit. But, yeah, I mean, White has been a huge factor. In fact, actually, you know what? My projection's 6 for him.
Okay.
So if the line's anywhere in that 4.5 to 5.5 range, I would probably take the over. And that does include Burkhead. So, honestly, it might be a little higher if Burkhead is, in fact, out.
Well, I was discussing it earlier with Murray. He's like, that was a big play for me last Thursday on that was my daily wager best bet,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard. Yeah.
Yeah. Anita and Marks and I both had the same thing independently. We both, like, during the day, because I'm not producing the show. Obviously, we have producers. So, like, I tell him my best bet when it's time. He's like, let's laugh. He's like, actually, Anita has the same exact play.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a really good one. So
Huge factor in that offense this season, again.
So we'll maybe revisit that. Maybe I'll have a Twitter play for Bonanza. So you have another prop.
Yes, I do. And it's speaking of the backfield there for the Patriots. Sony Michel, under 70.5 rush yards, as mentioned. Jets doing a pretty good job against the run. 3.6 yards per carry allowed so far. That is fifth lowest. I'm actually, and again, I do have Burkhead mixed in. So keep an eye on this one. Maybe you want to wait it out until Monday or until we get a better practice report on Burkhead. Not as confident since it's minus $1.10. If Burkhead plays, but if Burkhead's out, if Burkhead plays, I like this one more. I have him at 14 carries, 54 yards. He's been under in 3 of 6 games so far this season. Though, if you look at the exceptions to that, one was the Dolphins. Did we count anything against the Dolphins this year? We don't count anything.
We shouldn't.
Right. And the other two were the past 2 weeks against the Giants and the Redskins. Again, Rex Burkhead did not play in those games. They're the only games he's gone
and,
over this season.
And anyone who was watching that game and had the over rushing yards like I did, he had like 40 yards on the last drive. In fact, the last play, he
like
went left,
yards.
Cut back, got tackled, and then they set up the knees, and that went over with the rushing yards on that play. So if they don't, I mean, he was like 35 yards with like 10 minutes to go.
Yeah, exactly. So like that, actually last season he was under an 8 of 13 regular season games as well. Then the playoffs came around, he got like 20-plus carries every game and went over in all 3 games. And by the way, against the Jets, I mentioned their good run defense in the first meeting. He had 9 carries in that game, only 11 yards.
Hmm.
And that was without Quinnen Williams even involved for the Jets. He's back, of course, now, and they maybe will have CJ Mosley back at linebacker. So there's a lot of reasons I think to like the under. As mentioned, I'm at 54 yards in my projection on 14 carries. The line is 70.5. That's a big gap. So again, the only way I think I stay away is if Burkhead looks like
Burkhead.
He's going
to be back. And your projection is with Burkhead or without?
It is with Burkhead.
Okay. Yeah. And it's good stuff. It is good stuff. Mike, we appreciate the time so much. You have a little extra bonus, huh?
I do. Do you want to do a Sunday?
You have a Sunday afternoon play.
I do have a Sunday afternoon play, and I like this one a lot, so I wanted to bring it up.
Good.
Mike Williams to find the end zone. This one is plus $1.95. I love this one. Again, speaking of unlucky players in the touchdown department, we talked about Travis Kelce. Williams is the unluckiest player in the NFL in the touchdown department so far. 0 touchdowns. His expected total is 3.3, which is 17th highest in the NFL. That's despite missing an entire game and half of 2 others. Still, he ranks 17th in expected touchdowns based on his usage. Like Kelce, 5 end zone targets, tied for 6 in the league. He's caught none of them. Last season, he got 7 of 12 end zone targets. Did he just forget how to catch the ball when he's in the colored paint? No, of course he didn't. It's just, this happens sometimes. The balls are off the mark. A defender knocks him down. It's just a part of the NFL. This happens all the time. They go through these slumps, and then they get right back on track.
But over time, it regresses, you think?
You know, these things always seem to regress. I mean,
what about the Titans? Sorry, I cut you off. But what about the Titans' defense being so stout?
Yeah, they're I think they're – I don't have it right in front of me, but I'm pretty sure they're like mid-pack in terms of touchdowns allowed to offenses. So that's not a huge variable here, I don't think. The Chargers, though, do throw it a lot near the goal line. We spent a lot of time in the offseason talking about that. Remember with Phillip Rivers, mm-hmm. with his – passing touchdown prop. We spent a lot of time talking about how often they throw near the goal line. Their expected passing touchdown rate this season is 75%. That is the highest in the NFL. They love to throw near the goal line. Saw Hunter Henry score 2 touchdowns the other night.
Right.
His first game back. Williams will become a part of that if his role stays the same. He could, the way he's being used, he could lead the NFL in touchdown catches in the second half. The way he's being deployed so far, that's how much work he's gotten near the goal line. It's just a matter of converting, and I think that will happen perhaps this week. Plus, Doug, plus $1.95.
Yeah, just nearly, for one touchdown. Nearly 2-1, right? One receiving touchdown.
Love it. Love that one.
Well, Mike, a little bonus play there. So we appreciate that. Appreciate your being back here on the pod. I hope you're feeling better and continue to feel better. Good bye week. Nice juncture
nice
of the season.
Fresh now.
Yeah, nice juncture of the season. All right, my man. Be well.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Pay that man his money.
All right. Thanks to Mike Clay. Thanks to John Murray, Mr. Executive Director out there at the Westgate Superbook. So good to have him back on the pod. We missed him yesterday. Oh, yeah. No college plays we got from him. So maybe I'll have to tweet those out.
I'm just impressed that he's like with it, because if my team made it to the World Series, it would take like 48 hours.
Who is your team?
I'm an Indians fan.
Okay.
But like baseball's down the road. Football always goes first.
Yeah. I mean, Buckeyes have been treating you well over the years.
Yes.
Yeah, the Dodgers, it was pretty incredible. I remember 2 years ago I flew to Game 7 and then took the red eye back and then Ubered and got here for the podcast on a Thursday.
How were you feeling?
It was pretty groggy. I actually splurged for the business class, one of those kind of things. Not first class, but if I could sleep.
Smart move.
It was depressing. It was a depressing game.
At least you weren't stuck in like a middle seat down and, you know.
No, I had to, because I had to work and everything. But I will say this. We made some money on the game. Like it was 5-0. My buddy and I look at each other. We're like, Dodgers are not going to win this game.
I mean, if you're going to lose the game, at least make some money.
Yeah, it was like second inning. We just said, like, look, let's just eat our losses here. Like, let's just, if they come back and they win, awesome.
Yeah, it's a win-win.
And then we, you know, blew a bunch of money on the big juice. But you know that happens. So, gosh, that was 2 years ago, man. I like this NFL card.
I'm just gonna.
I hated last week.
I'm just gonna go find those guys. Picked this 27-3 and just follow.
Tuco.
Yeah, Tuco.
Tuco Salamaca.
I mean, 27-3.
It's pretty ridiculous.
I want to know what the odds are to do that.
I mean, there are probably trolls out there that's saying, "Oh, there's stale lines." There's probably like 3 stale lines and all that. It's just a hater. The guy's 27.
The guy's 27-3.
That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I'm following him.
Worst week is 4-1. I hope he's been firing on these games individually. He'd be doing quite well. Quite well. All right, my man. Good to see you as well. Thanks to everyone for downloading. Thanks to Mike Clay and John Murray once again. We'll be back next week. We're going to talk more NBA as well. And then back in the normal routine of college and the NFL.